From June 24th to July 3rd, the 20th annual Vancouver International Jazz Festival electrifies the city with great sounds from around the world. For 10 music-filled days, over 1,800 artists take to the streets, major theaters, outdoor stages, and nightclubs of Vancouver, over 40 venues in all. From the free street party on Water Street in Gastown to the Center for Performing Arts, from hip clubs like the Ironworks to great concert halls like the Orpheum Theater and the Commodore, jazz of all styles and stripes, blues, funk, soul, Latin, fusion, electronica, and world beat will resonate throughout the city. Madeleine Peru, Daniel Lanois, Roscoe Mitchell, The Bad Plus, Mavis Staples, Rachid Taha, Arturo Sandoval, The Herbalizer, and Dave Holland are just a few of the many great artists appearing. The Vancouver International Jazz Festival, June 24th to July 3rd. For tickets and information, call the Jazz Hotline at 604-872-5200 or log on to coastaljazz.ca.
It's just after 12 o'clock, and you are tuned to CFRO, Vancouver's Cooperative Radio, 102.7 FM. Coming up right now, Animal Voices.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Wow. Tuning in to Animal Voices, the show where we put the cart before the horse before the cart, here on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. My name is John Pranger, and my co-host today is Carl Loskin. Marge Adams is away on holidays today. And in the studio to discuss some issues concerning codecs today are Inga Hanley, a longtime observer of medical politics and the disease industry, as some people, including myself, call today's medicine, and a very special guest, Connie Vogel, who's leader of the Canadian Action Party. Thanks for joining us today, ladies.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to set the stage a little bit here, just so that everyone is going to find us believable, by quoting authority, and that would be a medical doctor in this case. Two quotes I have for you. First of all, a Dr. Franklin Bicknell wrote in 1956 in a book, The English Complaint, there are still people who feel that the laboratory rats will guide us to the perfect diet. As for me, I think it merely guides us to the garbage heap. And another doctor writing, a medical magazine editor in Oviedo, Florida, writing in 1986, Dr. Roy Cupsonell, a medical doctor, in my opinion, there exists a conspiracy of the medical pharmaceutical interests on an international basis to eradicate alternative health care, not disease, from the people of the world with a total disregard for the health and life of the people. I feel that the major motivation of this potentially destructive scheme is the desire to make money, and I call the condition of this utter sickness of man the greed disease. Here in the United States, I observe the conspiracy is interwoven with the American Medical Association, the federal government, especially the Food and Drug Administration, the Federal Trade Commission, the Pharmaceutical Advertising Council, and the entire media, including television networks, radio networks, newspapers, magazines, and book publishers. The media domination prevents the majority of people from being conscious of these negative forces and focuses their minds on the propaganda that alternative health care is quackery. However, The Office of Technological Assessment reported to the Congress in the late 1970s that only 10 to 20% of the methods utilized in allopathic, that is to say official orthodox medicine, are proven safe and efficacious. Quackery is defined as using unproven methods for a profit. So who are the real quacks anyway? Much of the enlightenment of the extremely cruel animal experimentation portion of this cartel is revealed by the writings of Swiss medical historian Hans Rusch in the book Slaughter of the Innocent and Naked Empress or the Great Medical Fraud, which have both suffered international suppression. Animal experimentation is a paramount symptom of this greed disease and of the inhumane, unscientific, ignorant individuals who perpetuate it throughout the world. Animals are not human beings and do not react in a similar fashion to a drug. What might be beneficial in an animal might be lethal to the human, and conversely. Where is the logic to transfer information from animal experimentation to human usage of toxic chemicals? It's in the pocketbooks of the members of the conspiracy, the greed disease. Now, the Canadian Action Party is calling for government action to end Canadian participation in Codex Alimentarius, which is about to be ratified in Rome this July. Connie, could you tell us a little bit about Codex Alimentarius and why you would call for Canadian withdrawal from that organization?
The Codex Alimentarius actually is a mechanism by which opportunity of people to treat themselves alternatively is going to be pretty much eliminated. So it's actually crazy when you see the actual policies that are part of Codex. I mean, just to simplify things for people, it's going to be illegal to hold or have more than a gram of vitamin C in substance once this Codex action is completely implemented. The traditional healing arts are going to be illegal. It's not going to be possible, for instance, to access Reiki or acupuncture. They're going to be forbidden forms of treatment. Genetically modified organisms are going to be mandated, legal, and they'll be unlabeled. It has to do with this whole business of Terminator seeds. You know, with places like Iraq already, right in their constitution, are forbidden from retaining seed crops.
Which they now have to buy from someone from Monsanto?
That's right, from Monsanto. Uh-huh. Toxic residues are going to be mandated, upper limits for pesticide residues and toxic chemicals and hormones in foods, and other contaminants are going to be much higher already. A lot of people have a lot of concerns about the levels that already exist, but they're going to be increased. Antibiotics, growth stimulants, and other hormones in food animals are going to be mandatory. Animal feed must be treated with antibiotics. Organic farming, free-range, biodynamic farming is going to be illegal.
So that imposes factory farming on
absolutely
everyone.
Absolutely. You know, I make a big deal about buying only wild salmon. So, I mean, those are some of the specific identification items I think that people can relate to in terms of what Codex is all about. Essentially, what Codex is all about is the evil side of globalization. A lot of us have been fighting this globalization process. Well, for me, I started in 1997 when we were fighting the multilateral agreement on investments, and I began to learn about what's going on, the fact of significant decisions being made that affect humanity, infect nations, eliminate our sovereignty and eliminate our citizen rights in our countries, being made by bureaucrats and then being sanctioned by our governments who are so... I mean, we have people elected. They don't know what they're doing. They didn't know what they were doing when they signed NAFTA, when they signed the FTA. They didn't even read these documents. Now we're more and more people, thanks to significant citizen movement around the world who are bringing information to people. People are now beginning to understand what's been going on. And the globalization, for so long, people that we respected even in as elected people were saying, well, you know, globalization is a good thing and we can just humanize it. Well, that's, you know, you just can't. That's not the agenda. That point you're making about greed, I mean, that's what it's all about. It's greed ruling the world for a few at the expense of all of us. In fact, if you look at what Codex is going to allow, for anybody who's concerned about the environment, it's going to kill us. It's going to kill the world.
I found this absolutely shocking. I mean, they're simply going to, by this commission, which is, I understand that the output of that commission is some 15,000 pages.
Yeah.
Who the hell is going to read that?
You don't. It's the same kind of thing with all these agreements.
Yeah.
And that's why what we're saying in the Canadian Action Party, we've got to get out of all of these agreements. Get out of them. They're evil. Including the World Trade Organization, all of these, NAFTA, FTA, CAFTA, which is the Central American Free Trade of Americas, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, they all have in them terms that are related to this kind of application that is happening in Codex, where we're required, under those terms, if we're part of those agreements that are on regional scales, if we're part of them, we're required, we're absolutely... we're absolutely forced to follow those guidelines that are set at a world body organization that is accountable to nobody. It's representative of nobody. We don't have a chance to get rid of them. And the worst thing about these agreements, like the World Trade Organization agreements, once they've fully ratified Codex, you can't change it. That's what happened in Europe right now when they were talking about their constitution for the European Union. The reason the two countries that rejected it so far is because one of the main things is that once you enter it, it's impossible to get out of it. Like, what insanity is that? What kind of a world are we structuring?
A one world sort of pen, I guess, for all us cattle. You know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How does the clauses in FTAA and so on and the World Trade Organization all subsume this codex so that once it's ratified, which will be next month, is that right?
That's right. It becomes
mandatory for all World Trade Organization members to adopt those measures.
That's right.
There's nothing we Canadians can do about it once we've. What are we actually adopting? Codex we're already part of the World Trade Organization,
yes.
Right? So can we stop it in our country and still belong to the WTO?
No.
So we need to get out of
the WTO.
Which is an enormous task.
Well, it is, but you know what?
But it's all...
It's the will of the people. We can do anything. The point of being a human being... To survive any kind of a horror that's ever existed on this planet Earth, as humans always have to date, until we blow ourselves up, maybe with the insanity that's going on in the militarization of the world right now, is the aspect of what's called hope. And inside the human spirit, there is that spark that makes us different from everything else that exists in the world, in the plant and the animal, in the plant kingdom, and. The hope and will. And we can. The fact that citizens around this world have created the momentum that has put some kind of real blocks on this movement of globalization. And there have been some effective successes. It's because people around the world are just saying, this is insanity. Our elected people are off the rails. And they've put incredible pressures on our elected people, and we have to continue doing that. And so I'm doing what I'm doing in my little way, and I'm still in the Canadian Action Party, and I'm the leader of that party now, precisely and only because I believe that there has to be a vehicle and a mechanism by which people can express their opposition to this. We're the only political party that outright has been saying from our existence, this globalization is evil, we've got to get out of it, we've got to quit it, we've got to be leaders to stop it. There are many other people in the world, and there are other countries in the world that think the way that we as a small party do. We're there. The human beings of the world, we own the world. Let's take it back its control.
But we're also mild-mannered, whereas these thugs are really a criminal elite, which shrinks at from no crime.
Yeah.
They've murdered presidents in order to achieve their ends.
All right. What does that do? Make us go and bury our head under the sand?
No,
the
fact it just means we have to. Yeah. We're up against a real.
Of course we are. We have to know that. But always throughout all of history, I mean, I just went through the Buchenwald camp, and to my surprise was to see that even within the horror of what was existing at that time, they had their own little resistance. They managed somehow to have a resistance group. The spirit of the human being is powerful.
You know, I mean, they could come out with guns drawn to yank out your dandelions because people do make claims about dandelions. Now, I have a herb here, which I just picked off the lamppost here. Okay, they're growing around every lamppost in the world. It's called plantain. And my mother used to put this on boils. If you had a boil, this would draw out the poisons overnight. this thing would become illegal because it's practicing medicine without a license or whatever the crazy terms are, and my mother might be burned for a witch, you know. Mm-hmm. It's back to witch burning, isn't it?
It's really a reversal.
How are they ever going to stop a weed from growing and from people using it?
Oh,
it's
just
not possible. It's just insanity.
You just use more herbicides.
Oh. I hadn't thought. You have a scheming mind.
Oh, not scheming at all. There was nothing to prevent them to come in and herbicide your garden.
That's exactly right.
That's
exactly what Codex is, part of what it's all about. One of the things they're mandating.
But surely everyone will wake up to that and say, no, man, but this is nuts.
It doesn't. You see, once we, in Germany, there was a democracy. And step by step, Hitler used the democratic parliament to give him the laws that allowed him to bring in the dictatorship. We're doing exactly the same thing. And see, once something, we all want to be legal, right? And this legalism is allowing them to do criminal acts in the name of the law.
By writing the laws so that to their advantage.
They're writing the laws in such a way that normal things become criminal acts. Nature becomes criminal. Health becomes criminal. You know, with the industry, for hundreds, if not thousands of years, an elite group has run the world. I mean, you had kings and princes, and they owned the people, right? Feudalism. With the Industrial Revolution and the reaction to the insane poverty, you had democratized, things were democratized. People spoke. This elite group didn't go away. They just reorganized. And
that's
now
right.
We are now in a position where they are taking back what they lost when democracies came up. In other words, they have infiltrated the governments. There are thousands of Swiss bank accounts, especially for people in the third world. You pay one of their leaders a couple million dollars in a Swiss bank account, and he'll do anything for you. And this is the way they do it. They have infiltrated all the governments. They have infiltrated all the agencies with their people. They have infiltrated the courts. They have infiltrated the justice system. And they are now writing the laws that criminalize normal behavior.
Most of the money that taxpayers give to the federal government goes to service a debt, which is ever increasing. That debt will eventually overtake all our production, so that people will be left with no money, the government will have no money, and the international bankers will foreclose on us. Isn't that right? And that is what the Canadian Action Party is really all about, isn't it? Reform of money so that we can actually, we don't need to sell off our assets, and we don't need to join these.
Yeah,
could you tell us a little bit about that concept of how is money made or created?
I think the basic thing to, just on your point about the debt, reality simply is that we only started that enormous, incredible, geometrically progressing debt when we bailed out the banks and when we stopped using statutory reserves. And this is only in the last 20 years that we've really stopped using the Bank of Canada in the kind
entirely
of way that we can. That's once again just putting our destiny in the hands of an elite few who rule us and whip us.
Are they really at the top of the pyramid?
Well, it's just the banking system, and they're part of the financial institution of course of the world are really at the top of the whole the elite structure. I mean, David Corton says it's not corporations that rule the world; it's the financial institutions
exactly
that rule the world. But that's another whole topic. But it was all related to the point of globalization,
right.
And right now we are specifically looking at what's going to happen with this codex.
And we're divesting ourselves of many of our rights and freedoms and corporations and business, you know, which are all being sold off, isn't it, to pay for this debt.
The health freedom movement, this whole business of recognition of what's going on at an international level has been followed by people in the alternative medicine area for quite a number of years. And when I first got involved in 1997 and looking at what's happening globally, I mean, it was there that I met a lot of people in the health movement area. And there have been a lot of individuals analyzing and studying this stuff for a long time. And when we first started talking about this in 1997, we were all dismissed as conspiracy theorists and idiots and nuts and crackpots. Now the agreements are coming more to the open, and the harm from those agreements is being exposed in a more direct way. And I think people can relate to them more now when we talk about these specific things like I just highlighted at the beginning of the meeting.
Yeah, Ayurvedic, Tibetan, tribal, and other traditional medicines which use herbs will be forbidden worldwide.
We won't. Yeah, it's crazy. It's totally crazy. So,
whereas the pharmaceutical drugs kill a couple hundred thousand Americans every year.
Three quarter million.
Yeah, if all medical error and so forth.
No drugs.
Just pharmaceuticals?
That's right.
Well, that's a new number for me. 2.2 million people are injured by drugs just in hospitals. 1.5 million people are hospitalized every year. And those are to be mandated, whereas harmless herbs are going to be outlawed.
I'd like to connect a few dots here.
Sure.
First of all, when it comes to debt, the debtor is slave to the person who holds the debt, right?
That's right?
To the creditor. Their objective in the third world and now here is basically to impoverish everyone with an enormous debt. Mm-hmm. Because if they have us in the position of debt, they have us totally controlled.
And there's no debt-making machinery but like war.
Well, the thing is, for instance, they've set up this revolving. When your bank account is basically guaranteed by the government, it means that your taxes are basically guaranteeing that when the banks go bankrupt, you're paying for it. In other words, in the early 1990s, there was a bill passed that everything that you own is collateral for the national debt. Now, if they want to take possession, they want ownership of everything. They want ownership of seeds. They want ownership of the food supply. They want ownership of the water. They want ownership of the air if they could only just stop the wind. They want ownership of every single thing, and they want to make sure that nothing is bought or sold that they don't control and they don't produce. Therefore, you can't have seeds that aren't patented. You can't have nature. You can't have natural herbal pesticides where we're using nature's own protection. You have to have their herbicides and their pesticides and their chemicals. You must buy what they produce, and it must be a monopoly. So you have to basically legislate everything else off the scene.
And that's what Codex is all about.
It's a matter of legislating everything else out of existence. Now, you have to go. I want to take you back 100 years now. When the Industrial Revolution made the Rockefeller giants and the Morgans and the et cetera, North America kind of became the big financial shift from England over to North America. And, of course, people don't realize in 1928, Rockefeller bought the controlling interest in IG Farben, so who supplied Hitler, okay?
IG Farben industry, which pretty well ran the war for the Germans.
So, in other words,
chemical output without which Germany could not have conducted a war.
And in 1900, the Rockefeller interests actually had three stooges that infiltrated the AMA. In the matter of 3 years, they changed it from an association into a solely owned corporation, which they bought for, I think, $10,000, because they were bankrupt, okay? And then through this corporation, which is the American Medical Association, the American Medical Association was formed for the explicit purpose of protecting the professionals from the intrusion of all these natural healers, all right? So it was designed to get homeopathy out of the way.
Which was sort of on its way to becoming the...
Which was 18...
The paradigm for...
In the 1850s,
century, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that was the doctors themselves for their own personal interest. But, however, the corporate interest took over. They turned the AMA into a corporation. And then they had already infiltrated the American government and owned that. And they got the Carnegie Foundation funded the Flexner Report, which then asked the AMA to become the legislators for the medical policy. The Flexner Report basically disqualified nature. The Codex basically prohibits nature. It's one step further. Basically, the Flexner report said it set up the scientific criteria in such a way that nature could not qualify. So everything that nature did was, quote, not scientific. No scientific evidence. You've heard that statement over and over. Because it's a linear analysis, and nature cannot be analyzed in a linear fashion, right? However, drugs can. One thing in, one symptom out, right? Now, along comes Codex, just making nature unscientific, which is upside down to begin with. Science is basically the study of nature, all right? And what they brought in was, quote, a drug medicine. It is quackery to begin with because it overrides natural, the way the body works. What we have now is a 100-year experiment where we say that the body doesn't know how to heal itself. The body has healed itself for ever since biological entities existed, right? All of a sudden, the body is stupid. The body doesn't know anything.
In spite of the Hippocratic Oath, which says...
Well, I mean, that's 2,000 years old. It is
nature that heals.
This is a new paradigm. Nature no longer heals. And so now nature is disqualified. Now, that isn't good enough. You see, people are voting with their feet. People know that nature heals. People by the thousands and millions are actually going to natural things again. Well, that can't be allowed. And so now you can't only disqualify nature. Now you have to prohibit nature. Now, after the Flexner Report, the American Medical Association was responsible for writing the Medical Act. In the very first Medical Act, it said it was illegal to diagnose, treat, or prevent a disease. So already 100 years ago, they had said that it was illegal to prevent disease.
Except with their toxic drugs or vaccines.
See, no one has ever scientifically proven that removing a symptom actually improves the health of a nation. No one has ever been able to prove that taking a drug actually improves your health.
Yeah, well, the typical item could be like this. A new U.S. study challenges claims made for the last 35 years that women can prevent breast cancer by regularly taking estrogen pills. The report seems to indicate the drug actually may cause the disease. And physicians have been prescribing estrogen for an estimated 5 to 6 million middle-aged women in the United States alone. That was an International Herald Tribune report, August 17, 1876. You're listening to Animal Voices, 102.7 FM. In the studio with me are Inga Hanley and Connie Vogel of the Canadian Action Party. Modern medicine is a negation of health. It isn't organized to serve human health, but only itself as an institution. It makes more people sick than it heals. That's what Ivan Illich said on Swiss television. He proved it in his book, Limits to Medicine. Well, it makes more people sick than it heals.
Well, basically, you're
it's disqualified itself. It should leave the scene.
You are prohibiting health, basically. You are destroying health, and you're prohibiting, and you're making it a criminal activity for anyone to want to be healthy and to do the things that make you healthy. Now, nutrients, by definition, are the building blocks of the things its body needs. That's what a nutrient is by definition. Now, how can they now say that nutrients don't belong in the body?
How would they feed themselves?
Oh, that's not a problem. They are an elite group.
But if no one's allowed to have a garden, only a lawn...
Rockefeller himself had a naturopath for his own physician.
A homeopath for a physician, and he said he never touched drugs in his life, although he spent millions promoting it, because the Rockefellers were deeply into the synthesizing of drugs from their oil sources. Didn't the granddaddy of them all start off as a quack, peddling bottled oil to the yokels in the oil fields?
Well, the pharmaceutical industry basically is sorcery.
Yeah.
It is quackery from so-called conventional medicine has no scientific basis if you use nature and health as your parameter. See, they start out with the wrong axiom. They basically said, oh, the body can't heal itself, you need drugs, which is wrong to begin with. And then they say, well, we will set up the definitions. Now, the definition of a drug was changed to suit their agenda a couple decades ago when Health Canada redefined a drug as anything that had a physiological function in the body. Well, if nutrients don't have physiological functions in the body, then why are we eating? Okay? So now we made a separate category. We call these functional foods. Well, food by definition is supposed to have a function. Well, no, of course not, because we have all these artificial food facsimiles, which are now qualified by definition as food. Now, I went to the meetings of the so-called public meetings when the new health, the Health Canada health provisions were being revised, right? The new medical health. And it's rather interesting that any nutrient that has a function in the body is now a nutraceutical, which is a subclass of drug. However, the food additives, the chemical food additives, which influence taste and texture, aspartame, MSG, on and on, they are classified as food and don't need to have any real overview, or they don't need to be checked. Now, if you took aspartame and MSG out of the North American diet, you'd empty half of our hospitals.
Can I just bring us back to the political issue, how we can deal with this? I'm just, as an analogy for people, I'm looking at some information I got from another source and from Health Freedom. And the reference to the fall of 1994, a World Trade Organization tribunal outlawed the ban of gambling, the ban on gambling in the state of Utah. And that opened the door to millions of dollars in penalties against every state in the United States that has anti-gambling restriction. Now what we have to do always when we're trying to deal with this stuff is bring it home, relate it to the power of these organizations. The charge that was taken to the WTO was that the ban on gambling violated America's obligation not to discriminate against foreigners providing recreational services. Mm-hmm. So you see, the reason I'm relating this is for people to understand that when our politicians at one level or another locally tell us we don't have money for Medicare, or we don't have enough money to fund it, mm-hmm. or that our system really isn't any good and we've got to change it. Or when they say to us, well, where am I going to get the money? I have to have gambling. I can't, be against gambling. What people have to understand is that they're really, our local politicians, whether they're at the municipal or the provincial or the federal level, are either lying to us, or they just don't know, or they do know that the real pressure is coming from our obligations on these international agreements that we're part of. And as a result, we're forced by those international agreements to bit by bit impoverish ourselves, as Inga pointed out, bit by bit eliminate these kinds of things that we have, any kind of structures or regulations that we've put into place for protection of the way we live our life, to have a better quality of life, if it interferes with somebody's profit, has got to go. That's what these international agreements are all about. That's the bottom line. And people really have to understand that unless and until we come to grips with this globalization process, unless and until we say, that's it, it's over, we're getting out, we're not going to participate in this anymore, unless and until we do that, we're just going to continue to be impoverished and destroyed as human beings, let alone as citizens in a nation.
So there's a lot of talk now about gambling, right, in our city, and reports just come out about the harms that it does, and of course the government makes a fortune off it. So we couldn't actually ban it here. There are people, our local politicians, who are trying to ban these slots. Couldn't actually do that.
Well, you see, the point is,
WTO.
Well, you see, somebody could take the challenge someplace, as was successfully done against the United States.
Oh.
But that's the point. That's the point. And a lot of the politicians do understand that, but they don't. They're not honest with us because they're not prepared to do the really big fight.
Well, they basically want to disqualify any grassroots decisions. You must not have self-sufficiency, and you must not have any self-dependency. You must not have any grassroots decision-making policies. Everything has to come on top. Now, people really think that these bodies are governing bodies. The World Bank is an association of the top banks. The World Trade Organization is an association of the biggest multinational corporations. The IMF is the implementation arm of the World Bank, which is the big bankers. They have basically come out and said, we will determine policy. And the governments, they're trying to go around the elected governments. So you can have elections, but there's nothing that you can make a decision on. So the World Bank and the IMF and the World Trade Organization really have no legitimacy. They have taken and announced it and elected themselves into a elite position where they simply say, we are going to regulate, and no one challenged them.
Do you find hope in the publication of John Ralston Saul's book, The End of Globalization? And I heard him on speak about that many of these WTO agreements United States are reneging on, with the countervailing duty on lumber and so, that this is part of the game, in fact, that China has now become a member of the WTO, part of course, globalization, mm-hmm. and that they are now playing the cards as such, mm-hmm. and that the United States is now wanting to diminish the rules and, in fact, breaking the rules. How do you feel about that?
Well, there has to be a form of structure and rules that are fair by which people play. We do have to have arrangements at all levels, but the terms have to be fair. The terms have to be changeable when circumstances prove to be unrealistic or immoral or hazardous. What we face is a world where we've got leaders, whether they're at the government levels or at the corporate levels, who really, you know, are the ones with the real power, who are playing like little boys in a sandbox, playing or a game of marbles. But the only trouble is the stakes are very, very high. They affect the whole world. It's true. We're looking at a mechanism of weighing and balancing of power, shifting of power. The point is, we have to have structures, and that's what people tried to do at the end of the Second World War, to put into place structures that would ensure there was a mechanism of controlling the possibility of evil surfacing again. But we didn't succeed, you see. So it's a kind of thing that we have to constantly work at. It's just like freedom. You have to be ever vigilant about freedom or you lose it. I mean, you just can't take that for granted. You have to constantly struggle to change it so that it works in the interests of people. That's the bottom line. If I make this decision, whose interest is it going to serve, is the question every elected people should be asking. Unfortunately, too many of them seem to ask, how am I going to be personally helped?
And that's what I'd like to ask you, maybe to get into a few more specific instances, and one which the GVRD is facing right now, and Inga previously mentioned that the water situation, mm-hmm. the whole, in fact, that Inga said they want to own everything.
Yes.
But to me now, this whole thrust towards having meters everywhere, is that tied towards somehow the globalization, what we can sell the water at is the price we have to charge the people in British Columbia?
Well, it could be. I mean, I haven't put my mind specifically to that point. Water, air, those are items that should be free for all people. And the question is, of course, some parts of the world have so much less of it than other parts. And so what people who want to extract from us to their benefit and at our penalty will say is, well, you know, you have to be generous. You've got so much, you should let us have it. And I'm thinking specifically of the United States, who have been after our water since day one. The fact is, if you happen to be lucky enough to have an asset, you have to manage it well. You have to make sure that you can distribute it to yourself. You have to make sure that you lobby around the world that the distribution of that resource is fair. You have to have controls and regulations for the benefit of your own people. The whole issue of privatizing water, turning it into a measure where everybody has to pay for it, yeah, that's on there. That's on the agenda. It's a mechanism by which they can do that. The aspect of the actual metering people.
Well,
that's a good point. It's a good question.
In Bolivia, they actually took people to court for collecting rainwater because they claimed they had bought the rights to all water. Listen. And that's when the population rose up. And there is the third world is not, they are seeing what is happening here, believe me.
We saw in Johannesburg the people refused to pay their water bills.
Yeah. Yeah. But we are actually being brainwashed into this idea that everything is patentable, and we have bought into this idea of intellectual property. And the minute you have an idea, that's your idea, and nobody can ever use it except you. I mean, the wisdom of the earth and the wisdom of civilization would never have evolved if everybody, quote, owned his own little idea. Nobody could ever use it. And it is because of our infatuation with this so-called intellectual property that they got the idea of genetically engineering, of owning the genes, okay? They didn't invent the genes, but they own the gene if they've discovered it. If you discover something, you own it, even though it's been there for mankind forever. Now, there are some people, now this is the ray of hope, and this is really where every single citizen has to become an activist. Vandana Shiva and two other very, very brilliant and determined scientists single-handedly reversed a patent on the neem tree. Now, the neem tree has been the supplier of almost everything that the Indian people needed. It was a natural insecticide. It was a medicinal. It was just fantastic. Okay? Everybody could have a neem tree. Everybody could grow it. Everyone could collect it. Everyone could use it. However, somebody in North America found out that, hey, it has pesticide properties, so he took a patent out on it. And Vandana Shiva took it to the European Patent Council and won, because basically she proved that the person who took out the patent did not invent any of the uses of the neem tree. This is an old folk usage, and therefore that patent was reversed. We have to do the same thing for every single herb, for every single plant. We cannot allow intellectual property to own the essentials for survival. You see, when you own all the seeds, and there are now only three big seed companies, they have bought up all the seeds. They're bringing in laws that says it's illegal to save any seeds, never mind just the genetically engineered ones, okay? If corporations own the elements of survival, then they can create famine, they can
they control supply.
They supply everything. They basically have control over life and death. They can engineer genocide just with the food supply.
The same struggle happened with the people in Panama with the certain qualities in blood. But you know, I really would like to, if with John is to turn this on the Canadian Action Party on agriculture, and that we have a situation where it's easy to say family farms, not factory farms. Mm-hmm. And you have a very strong policy on that, right, which I think very enlightened, because a policy we see is that we see these foodborne diseases which basically emanate from the factory farming, right, of animals. So, and that some 50% of all the antibiotics that are being used are used on animals, not as prophylactics, but as growth accelerators. Now, people say, and this government here with the avian flu, they've supported the factory farms and basically the chickens, and we have this exponential growth of factory farms in the Fraser Valley. Now, you're saying that that factory farms, in fact, provide very little employment, mm-hmm, and that there is an alternative. Connie Fogel, please tell us the alternatives to these factory farms.
Well, you know, I in the last election, which was really only a year ago, spent a little bit of time with some farmers in Alberta, actually, and they made a lot of they're people that are really very knowledgeable about all this issue that you're talking about, and they've themselves shown in their own communities the success that they can be and that they can do if they're not asking for handouts, for instance, to help them to survive. They want just to be able to be allowed to earn a living themselves, which they can do, and they can do very well. But their problem is the competition they're getting from government supporting corporate farming and the factory farming kind of concept, rather than supporting the individual farms, which these people are pointing out themselves are, they're healthier. They don't want to use all these other kinds of products. They see the harm that comes to them health wise. So, as a political party, our position has been very strong from the beginning to recognize the body of information from the very people who are working in the industry that supports family farming rather than corporate farming, for all the reasons that we're talking about. The corporate industry is there only for the purpose of making profit. It's not for the purpose of providing a service. And when we're talking about delivery of food and growing food, healthy food, so we're talking about survival of the planet. But I'm intrigued by this point you made about the water and the meters. It's a darn good point. You know, I hadn't put my mind to that, but quite frankly, yes, it's a form of capturing the water supply and forcing people to pay for that, and then next thing we know, that will be privatized.
And you know, the easy way to say to people we're going to have metering is to highlight people. Well, West Vancouver, they're the abusers. Yeah. They're using more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And don't you want to stop abusers? Yeah. Of course. It's like we want to have the rule of law. Mm-hmm. But the insidious side of it is that the structure will change with how...
Yep. You know, go ahead, sorry. What's coming to my mind is this whole process of who it is that's making the decisions for us. I'm thinking of the little people at GVRD or at various city councils who are the elected people, and they're bombarded with paper from their bureaucrats of why they should do whatever they do, in this case, metering the water. And when those people who are elected people don't have a broad enough background of information about all this stuff, they get sucked in very easily. And so we get to the point of who makes the decision, just the bureaucrats, you see, who are unaccountable, unelectable. They're hired, they get into these positions. And you take every level of government, right up to the World Trade Organization. We have representatives from the corporate elite, but you have representatives... Not from, there might be the odd person from government, but they're really the unelected, they're the bureaucrats that go there. And they sit around and they make these decisions. And that's exactly what's happening down at this local level when you're talking about the metering of the water. And so we're back to people coming to grips with paying attention specifically to how they can exercise their freedom, their rights, and the mechanisms that we have to have that. And so you have to have accountable, representative, governing forces. You have to have government, but people have to be more, have to be paying more attention to what the structure of government needs to be. We've got to insist that our elected people pay attention to what's going on in the world, and we have to insist that our elected people have courage, only put into place elected people that have the courage to challenge this very powerful force and to stand up to it. That's the bottom line.
The most difficult thing I have to accept in this is that somebody once said to me, they have time on their side.
Well, that's true.
They're prepared to wait, and eventually they have their little setbacks, but eventually they'll prevail.
That's exactly what happened in the whole gambling fight. A lot of us were very active. I was one of the very active people in the fight to prevent the expansion of gambling in British Columbia, going back to 1993. And what all the literature shows you is that the gambling industry, they've got money and they've got time. The citizens fight and we succeed at certain levels for a certain period of time, but we wear out. I mean, we have jobs, we have homes, we have children to feed, we have mortgages to pay. We can't carry on. So it's very, very difficult. That's back to the point again of why when we elect our people, we have to demand that they know what's going on and that they're going to deliver a service to us.
See, a big part of the problem is that our educational system compartmentalizes information all the way up. There are very, very few people in positions of authority and responsibility that can actually connect the dots, because nowhere in their educational system have these dots been connected. I'm going to make a definitive statement. It is literally impossible to have a healthy population that gets its food supply from factory farms and factory crops, what I call plantation crops of with herbicides and pesticides, processed foods, irradiated foods, fluoridated foods, and genetically engineered foods. It is literally impossible because every single one of these modalities is health destructive on its own. And when you combine them all, you have a very sick population. But when you have a very sick population, then you also have a population that is too sick to fight.
In 1900, the risk of cancer was 1 in 30. In 1980, the risk of cancer was 1 in 5. In 1990, the risk was 1 in 4. In 1995, the risk was 1 in 3. In 2000, the risk of cancer was 1 in 2. Under the watch of the AMA and the CMA,
well, the purpose, the primary
the
purpose.
The cancer rate has risen to such an extent that half of us will die of cancer.
Well,
and yet they say they're the only ones who can cure cancer.
No,
and the naturopaths have to be outlawed.
All of their policies actually, all of these drugs actually cause cancer. Irradiated.
Yes, they produce
cancer-causing
drugs.
There is nothing that will cause cancer more predictably than irradiated food. Because they create so many free radicals.
Uh-huh.
We know that fluoride, within 2 years of a city fluoridating, the cancer rate just skyrockets.
Really?
So we know these things. But the other interesting thing...
So most cancers are preventable. 85% or so
are
actually caused by environmental factors. The food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe.
They are a disruption of the metabolic process. And they are of one of two things. They are from the toxins that we put in that interfere with the metabolic process and from the lack of proper nutrients. So in other words, the body doesn't have what it needs to work on. It's like putting bad gas into a car, right? And then putting a lot of sugar in the gas.
You see, one of the points that this Rima Label, the medical doctor who wrote this excellent article, which is on the CAP website, it's called Codex Alimentarius Explained. She talks about the toxic residues, and when she talks about Codex setting these limits, these upper limits, vastly increasing the amount of pesticide residues, toxic chemicals, and hormones that are going to be put in foods, she says the current acceptable levels of toxins are already responsible for most of the incidence of cancers, heart disease, autism, chronic degenerative conditions, and organ failures that are associated with mortality and morbidity globally. Increasing the permissible levels of toxins can only accelerate personal and global suffering.
But the cure is still just around the corner. Every year collect millions for the cancer societies.
The American Cancer Society was founded by the Rockefeller Foundation. And so are all of these other, you know, the Heart Foundation, the Arthritis Foundation, the Multiple Sclerosis, on and on.
Self-serving charities, are they?
Basically these are they're public fronts to make sure that they have a control over the information that goes out. And you'll notice that the Heart Association never goes above saying, you know, drink enough water, get exercise, you know, all these kind of motherhood and apple pie things.
Yeah.
They never really get down to the nitty gritty of what's causing the problem.
No, because then they're up against major corporations.
And the American
the food industry, the drug industry.
The American Medical Association, in collaboration with the legal entities and the government entities, their primary function has been to make sure that absolutely nothing that challenges the supremacy of the drug industry will ever be allowed. In other words, you cannot allow a cure. In 1920, we had a cure for cancer from Dr. William Koch. In 10 years later, we had a cure for cancer from Dr. Royal Rife. In the 40s, we had a cure for all viral diseases from Dr. Klenner. We're not using any of these things. In fact, these people were all taken to court for illegal science. Now, how can science be illegal? Now, I would like to throw out the challenge. You see, if you actually run two parallel experiments, one treated with drugs and one treated with Dr. Hoffer-style orthomolecular medicine, orthomolecular medicine will restore health every time. It will win hands down. Therefore, you will never have this experiment being done because they can't afford to have the actual evidence. Why do they want mandatory fluoridation? Because they don't want a town that doesn't have fluoride to compare it with, okay?
Right.
They don't ever want a comparison because if they have the comparison, then the true science comes out.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes left. Connie, you want to address the best way to for us to get us out of these calamitous agreements?
Citizen action. Citizens, get off your butts and start fighting.
There are several groups, and they seem to be at odds, at loggerheads with one another, too, the one maligning the other, you know, and even connecting some with the intelligence communities and the CIA.
Well, the Canadian Food Association has actually been taken over by these big pharmaceuticals. So they have their people in there. Mm-hmm. So connect the dots.
One thing I would just say, I made a couple of references to our website. I'll just give you that site, www.canadianactionparty.ca. There are some where we've been updating that, and that website, and this Codex Alimentarius Explained is a really good article that people should go to.
Yes, it is. It's horrifying, too.
It's a reputable person. She's a medical doctor, she's one of the very few people who have read the 1,500 pages of Codex. So,
1,500, not 15.
For anybody who is alarmed by the comments that maybe we are making and don't want to believe us or want to accuse us of being conspiracy theorists, well, I'm recommending please go and read this article and read all the other good information that's around there. And the bottom line is, we have got to demand that whether it's a non-governmental organization or whether it's a government body who are saying we can humanize these international global arrangements. We have to stand up to them and say, no, we can't. Okay. And we've got to stop it. Uh-huh. Got to change. That agenda since the end of the Second World War was to structure the world in a way to serve the interests of a very elite few of the world. And the agenda for people, masses of us, surely is to serve the interests of all of us. And so that means we've got to get out of those arrangements.
Right. And how should our food, or how should supplements and herbs and minerals be regulated?
As far as I'm concerned, they should be regulated for quality.
Yes. But not as drugs. They shouldn't be categorized as drugs. Is that
quite
what you're
frankly,
saying? They should be categorized as foods?
We have to have an open marketplace. If you don't have things that can compete for efficacy, If that's mandated ahead of time, then you'll never have any innovation. If no one is allowed to try anything new, you'll never find anything new. There is absolutely no reason why nutrients should be regulated as drugs. Besides, we already know what the toxic levels are.
Yes.
We already know.
We know that epidemiologically. Well, thanks to both our guests, Connie Fogel of the Canadian Action Party and Inga
Hanley.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Animal Voices. Thanks very much for listening. Our website is www.animalvoices.org, and we post our programs there on the audio page. Links to the Vancouver Humane Society, the Earth Save Canada organization, and the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society are posted on the first page, and you can listen to these past programs under the audio link. So thanks to our interesting guests once again. Alan Jensen was at the controls. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you for